It's the cinematic event of the year. Critics are saying a stunning, breathtaking triumph of savings. It's 2-for-1 cinema tickets from Compare the Market in cinemas all year.
That sounds like a great movie.
Sergey, it's no movie. It's 2-for-1 offer on cinema tickets.
Oh, yeah. I knew that.
Get 2-for-1 cinema tickets every Tuesday or Wednesday with Compare the Market. Simples.
When you take out a qualifying product to Compare the Market, one membership per year, participating cinemas, 2 standard tickets only, cheapest free. T's and C's apply.
Hey, it's Dan Bova from Entrepreneur Media, and welcome to How Success Happens, the show where I talk to awesome people who do awesome things and ask the simple question, how on earth did you do that? Ready to get informed and inspired? I am too, so let's get to it. How Success Happens starts now. Hey, today's guest is one hell of a comedian and actor who you've seen on such iconic shows as 24, Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and her new hit, North of North, which just announced a second season on Netflix. She's also got her new stand-up special, Mary Lynn Rice Cub Road Gig, which you could watch right now on YouTube, but not right now. Listen to this, then watch it right after this is over. Welcome, Mary Lynn.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. That was a very tight professional intro.
Really? Only a couple of stumbles there, but we're okay. Mary Lynn, if your resume was my arm, I mentioned like the tip of my fingernail. You've done so many great things. And that's really all I wanted to say. It's not really a question there.
Yeah, it is. Strange, because I am to that point in my life where I think the same thing. I go, wow, you've done a lot of things. And, you know, before I jumped on here with you, I was, because of the nature of this podcast and how you framed it, and, you know, I'm going, oh my gosh, how success happens. I guess this is what success looks like. And you have a couple moments of collecting your thoughts. And it's been a combo of being lucky enough to do what I love. It functions as a certain therapy for me. It's pretty social. It's very interesting. It's always different. And couple that with just coming from the Midwest and a working class family and, you know, being a woman and getting paid less, I don't have time to stop. You just keep going.
That's awesome. Well, I mean, you're an actor. You also write and produce your own comedy specials. But even just going back to your early days, what did you think success would mean? Okay, I got my first role. I'm successful now. Versus now, you've done a lot of great things. When you're finished with a project, how do you say that was successful?
See, I like your questions. I told you before we started, I like your podcast. But going off of even my first answer, which is like, I am at a point in my life where I'm lifting up my head and going, wow, you've done a lot of stuff, and it has been an organic process. It's been a fun process. It's been hard, and now it shifts because I still do a lot of live comedy, and I do it because I love it, and I drive out of my house at night, and it's hard. I don't want to leave and go be in a place, but then once I do it, it reminds me that I love it, and I'm doing that as a workout. I'm doing that to hear material. You know, a lot of times I'm not getting paid, especially when you do local shows where there's a bunch of people. I'm doing it so I can be around other comedians. And there are some days where I go, well, I don't want to do that. And then I remind myself, I'm doing that because I want to do that. Mm-hmm. And I am in the position that I get to do that. I've so trained myself as an artist and a person to pivot. Okay, now how can I point myself towards the thing that I hope? Because with art, it's different too, because you're pointing yourself towards your process and what you think is authentic, and you're hoping that it will elicit money, something that's commercial. So it's this balance between what do I like to do? And if I'm lucky enough, there's something in the marketplace, you know, and mine has typically been contingent upon companies or other people. You know, there was one point when my son was 10 years old and he realized, and I think I was on the phone, we were in the car or something, when I hung up, you know, it was my agent talking about potential role. And he says, So they just decide if they like you or not. And it was like dawning on him. And I said, yes, don't be an actor, son. Don't be an actor. That's what it is. They're going to have a couple days to decide if they like me or they just don't want to ever speak to me again. And, you know, success for me now is being able to do it because I love it and recognizing that and doing all my mom stuff, you know, for the most part, leaving town only when I want to and just being able to have that balance of life.
That's awesome. The freedom. And what your son points out too, I love talking to comedians and stuff because you are the product. You're the thing. So it takes so much courage. It's one thing to make a ashtray and try to sell it, but like you're the ashtray and you have to get up there and you have to take risks, which leads me to this stand-up special road gig because I want you to explain it to everyone, but you did this in a very unconventional way. My understanding is usually when someone's ready to do their special, they get this ornate theater and it's packed with rabid fans and people who follow your every word, but you did it a little bit differently. So why don't you explain how you went about this?
I followed what I was already doing, which is these, you know, I tour sporadically. I take the bookings in clubs where I get the bookings. And this was part of a weekend that I was doing outside of Chicago, not even in the city proper. And the audience that night was people who had bought tickets to see me that night. And some people who maybe just bought tickets to the comedy club and didn't know they were seeing me. And I had one chance to do the show. It was self-financed, self-produced. My friend Jeffrey, who travels with me, opens for me. He directed it because I realized I really respect him. He's really smart, insightful, but also he knew my act so well because all the material I had been doing on the road, but I also had honed the material to the point where I was kind of ready to throw it away at a moment's notice. So it was a different kind of challenge and process for me because the audience that night, they were very reactive and I got very lucky, but they also didn't shy away from talking to me and asking questions.
Yes.
Again, that goes against what, when you prep a special, you would think, I want to deliver it this way. And, you know, I knew the sort of set pieces that I wanted to deliver a certain way, but there were a lot of gaps to let in what was happening in the moment, which was just, as far as the audience was concerned, a spontaneous taping. And we even tried to, you know, we didn't really have a rehearsal or a load in, or I was able to get, I got lighting, sound, and cameras, right? So there wasn't really a design. We tried to take the club logo down to make it more neutral and it looked worse without the sign. So, you know, shout out to Zany's Rosemont, which will just be forever tied to me and my special randomly. I mean, they were wonderful, but that's just where the special was. It wasn't like a neutral thing that was then mine, just was a night at Rosemont. And it was my friend Jeffrey who came up with the title too, which is just simply road gig. This was gig on the road, which I thought perfectly captures what I do when I'm on the road.
It's hilarious. The crowd is totally into it, which is great because I'm not a comedian, but I've heard people talk about, you know, some nights you get up there and you just got a bad crowd. They're in a, you know, a bachelor party or bachelorette party. They're half paying attention. So what a risk, but it paid off. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I feel very lucky. And for the most part, I would say most of the people were there to see me on purpose. And there was enough excitement in the room. But, you know, sometimes I get factions of people that know me from different things. And also your job as a comedian that night is to bring us all together in sort of one, you know, because sometimes there are people that are really excited about knowing me from the show 24. And those are people who are very, not serious, but if 24 is your favorite show, you're not necessarily the type of person that's coming out to see live comedy.
Right, right.
You have a different agenda. You have different things on your mind. And, you know, it's interesting to try to tie those people in with the people that know me from Always Sunny in Philadelphia, who are probably already drunk, expecting a different kind of a vibe, ready for anything trashy, you know, and the 24 fans think we're going to save the world or that burst behind the curtain. Honestly, none of those are the case. It's somewhere in between.
So when you are putting your act together, you tell a very funny story about, I don't want to give away jokes, but let's just say a guy sends you a picture, a box of extra large condoms, who you're dating, I guess, at the time, at least. But do you give any warning to this person? Hey, remember that dumb thing you did? I'm going to talk about it.
No, absolutely not. I hope that he hasn't seen it. And I try to get away from things being so specific and so personal, but sometimes things happen in your life that are just pure gold. And so they go directly on stage for the most part. I mean, it's embellished, it's heightened, it's structured comedically, but you know, the kernel of that is absolutely true. And I just hope he doesn't see it. And I don't mention his name. And I hope maybe he thinks like that wasn't me.
Some other guy. With comedians, because often the humor comes from these, not like a great moment in your life. And are you immediately cognizant of that? Something sucky just happened and, oh, wait, I can use this? Or does it take a minute to process and be like, oh, that thing that happened last week that I hated, actually, I can talk about that?
With stuff like that, it's more of a process, because when it's that bad, in real life, you really do have to be invested in a different way. You know, the things that are like the biggest, most relatable, like death or divorce or kids or sex life, the biggest things that happen are the most real, and they have to be so that they can transform. And sort of the opposite is true. There are a lot of little things that happen throughout the day that I think, oh, that'll be funny. And sometimes it is, and sometimes it isn't. Sometimes I'll say it on stage and I'm like, oh, that was dumb, or that didn't translate. And for me, that's always, fortunately and unfortunately, the second half of the writing almost always is on stage for me. So I've got to just say it out loud. Either, oh, that's trash, or, oh, there's something there, let me work it. Or sometimes, if you're lucky, it just comes out the right way.
I was just thinking about, I saw an interview with Jamie Foxx where he was relating how he was talking to Eddie Murphy about how they couldn't go back to stand-up because things were just too good for them and they had nothing to complain about. Is that, does that ring true?
That's really funny.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the sort of deciphering of that is their lives have become a little bit unrelatable.
Yeah, right. He talked about walking through Eddie Murphy's house and there was a scent of pomegranate being like pumped into every room. And he's like, no one can relate to this at all.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because to the point of what I was just saying, when you've got everything orchestrated and you have the money to have everything to your taste and to your comfort, if you fell from that or something bad happened, because, you know, you're still human, that would be some really good comedy. If we got a view into that world, when a crash has happened, when something has fallen apart, or someone's not paid their taxes, or someone's been involved in something illicit, or some kind of heartbreak within that world, that could be really interesting. It's just up to them. Also, you could decipher that as they're not willing to go there. Or conversely, perhaps your life is just more complacent and you're loaded and you smell pomegranate every day and you have nice sheets and you just go on like that for a while. And then, yeah, you don't have any material, but good for you.
Right.
You're just walking through a gentle breeze and having all the foods you want, having everything done for you.
What's the predominant scent wafting through your house?
Oh, boy. Well, today, you know, I cooked breakfast, last day of school. We probably have bacon and...
Oh, nice.
Dog and...
Bacon and dog. That's perfect. So I wanted to talk about the show, North of North. Congratulations. That's pretty awesome. And from what I understand about how you took on the role and where it's filmed, seems to me you are the type of person who's just like, you know what? Let's go do it and see what happens. Can you tell everyone a little bit about it?
That's pretty much the case. And it was driven by the script was really strong. The show North of North on Netflix, as you mentioned, we just got picked up for season two, so I will be going back there, is set in the Canadian Arctic in the real town of Iqaluit, which is fictionally called Ice Cove. And our showrunners are these really amazing women, Stacey and Alethea, who are huge TV fans and writers and producers. They're our creators, and they're from there. This is part of the beginning of their legacy of stories about Inuit culture and Indigenous cultures that we don't normally see, you know? And it was mission to create this show that was this world that is completely unusual, but also relatable. So the main character's a small town, but modern Inuit woman who's trying to expand her horizons, and she blows up her life in trying to do that and her marriage. But everybody knows her business because it's a small town, and just created this world full of characters that are just really lovable and interesting. And I play the head of the community center that she volunteers at, and she's trying to get a paying gig for me. So I'm a little bit of a gatekeeper, but then our relationship flip-flops and I end up needing her knowledge of the area and the end of this season. So we have a fun, complex relationship.
I love when you were talking about when you first were flying to the location, how you saw trees starting to disappear and it was just ice and snow, and they offered you on the plane a special coffee. Did you imbibe?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you said about me earlier is accurate of let's just see what happens. And to that point, they offered me a special coffee. It seems like that's the thing to do. Sort of say yes, if you know, the when in Rome. And yes, I again embellished comedically, which the Canadian North Airlines ended up like retweeting or reposting, you know, that I said, oh, no, thank you. They said, I think you do want a special coffee, because they knew that the booze and the sugar would help soften the edges for a Southerner that's not prepared for what's going to happen in this completely different climate, extreme.
It's so cool that they're doing it there, because you watch an Avengers movie and there's a person standing in front of a green curtain and now they're floating in outer space. And it seems like they probably could have done that, but it's cool that they didn't.
Yeah, I think that's part of their mission, is that it be authentic and that they can start the industry there, hopefully create some jobs. And who knows, they're probably going to have more tourism now because of the show.
We've talked so much about here, the kind of like cool cred you have is insane. It's Mr. Show. It's the Larry Sanders Show, Always Sunny, Arrested Development, just these like legendary comedy shows. Can you talk a little bit about what it's like on those types of shows? Is there a through line of the people who are running them and creating them? Are they all like their own different beast? Do you see something that connects them all and why they're just such standout great moments?
Yeah, a little bit of the answer is in your question, that they are all their own beast, but the through line in these great shows is the vision of the creators and the specificity and the drive and vision that's particular, you know, whether it's Gary Shandling, Bob Odenkirk, David Cross, or Paul Thomas Anderson, who one of my favorites that I've been on her shows too, Amy Sherman Palladino. When you see these undeniable people that are able to be driving on all cylinders in all aspects, or even just one specific, in the case of Gary Shandling, just such a specific confidence in his humor and how he knew he wanted the world to be. Because I remember some of those table reads, because I was really, really new. And I was, not to disparage any other sitcoms, but they're different styles, right? And I was going out for what used to be a pilot season. And, you know, if you were lucky, you'd get 6 to 10 regular three-camera sitcoms, and I was used to that, like this couplet where the one character would set it up, the other character would pay it off, and there's a certain broadness of character where you could go, oh, that's the wacky neighbor, or that's the this. And I remember reading the script, one of the scripts of Larry Sanders' show, Alone, and going, I knew I loved the show, but I remember physically reading the script and going, oh, I don't see the jokes. I'm not sure if I'm getting this. And then when we did the table read and people were reading in character, then it was like, oh, this is my favorite humor ever, because it is so specific to the character that it really doesn't work until you hear them deliver it. So yeah, it was just a different type of joke telling that had more layers to it and are specific to his vision of who Larry Sanders was, you know, as an example. And I think that's something that all these different shows have in common.
I have to thank you also because, so when Jimmy Kimmel's show launched, I got hired as an associate producer and I had no idea what my job was, but it turns out it was your job on the Larry Sanders show.
Did we talk about this before?
We may have. Sorry if I'm repeating myself.
No, I'm sorry. That's how long it's been since we talked, because I'm like remembering as we're talking.
But yeah, I had no idea what I was supposed to do. And then I was like, oh, that character on Larry Sanders. Okay, I get it.
Really?
So thank you. Thank you for that.
That's very funny. Well, of course, I took over for Janine Garofalo, who was the original book of that show. So thank you to Janine. And it was my manager who suggested me for that role. And yeah, that was one of my first parts. So my first time playing a fake booker and your first time playing a real booker.
Playing a real one, yeah. So speaking, I'm curious about this. Your character on Always Sunny, Gail the Snail, insanely funny. When you first read the scene when you're all at the dinner table, or I think it was the Thanksgiving dinner table, and you're talking about what you're doing to Danny DeVito's character under the table, how was reading that for the first time?
That is a perfect example of something that is absolutely terrible as a person, as myself, reading it. And let's say maybe we're reading it in rehearsal and I'm maybe not quite in character and I'm going, oh God.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I don't want to say this. And then once you get into character, then it's just anything goes. I mean, that's the beauty of acting, is that you're giving yourself permission. It was the character. I want to be true to this character. Gail the Snail is some of the most fun because it's just the outer reaches of ridiculous and yeah, gross and somehow weirdly lovable still. And that's really, really fun to play, to find the connector that makes it a real person acting like that. That's a fun thing to imagine, that this person really doing this and connecting that to your own desires or thoughts or feelings is a really weird, fun, free, imaginative exercise.
And I just have to say, I mean, I'm sure that could be read in a million different ways, but the way you read it and the look on your face is just so goddamn funny. Thank you. Lots of laughs from that.
Thank you. I love Gail.
All right. Well, let's dip into the speed round of How Success Happens. You think you're ready for that?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. What is something that most people love, but you secretly can't stand?
You know what? I don't care about barbecue or hamburgers. Okay. Now, when people are like, oh, you got to go have, I'm just like, oh, sounds heavy. It's not like that's too much, especially when I'm traveling alone. I'm like, you think I'm going to go sit at a loud barbecue and order a beer and a plate of meat? Who do you think I am? People love to, they want to tell you about the best bacon, egg, cheese, there's an egg on top of a, stop. You got to have the deep dish pizza with the five different types of meat. And, no, I don't. Whoa, are you vegan? No, that's too much. what you're doing is too much. Stop. Stop.
Fair enough. Good answer. What is your favorite way to turn off your brain?
Oh, so many ways I have to do that. I just fired up a new season of an old Project Runway last night. That's really good. I do long early morning walks. Although, you know, sometimes that gets the brain going, but I notice the thoughts and they filter through. Yeah, I just had my bedroom decorated and it's got a little place for meditation. So you'll have to talk and see if I've retaken up meditation.
Oh, cool.
As of now, I've only done it once or twice. But I think the best way to start that is to just start slow. You give yourself like 2 or 5 minutes and then you're like,
yeah.
And then you can build, but.
Yeah, awesome. So what's a habit you are happy to have and one you wish you could ditch?
I'm happy that I have kind of made a habit of working out and walking. I wish I could ditch the eating right portion of it.
Okay.
I don't need to eat a plate of barbecue, but I would like to eat an endless amount of like peanut butter pretzels. I would like to just snack all day, every day. And I don't think it's unreasonable to have like a piece of cake or two per day, but I can't do that.
Right, got it. Back in the day, who was a better roommate, you or Sarah Silverman?
Oh, absolutely Sarah Silverman. I was a mess. She was a great roommate and I was lucky that she allowed me to be there.
Awesome. So you happen to be flipping through TV and 24 comes on. Are you changing the channel or watching it?
I'd probably leave it on.
And finally, you're credited with having the last line on that show. Do you remember what it is? And can you give us a repeat performance?
Shut it down. Is that right?
Yes. Nailed it.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know I remembered that.
Wow. Nailed it. I mean, you're supposed to have tears streaming down your face, but pretty damn good.
Not today.
Awesome. Well, Mary Lynn, we talked about, you got the show on Netflix. You've got the special on YouTube. Where else can people keep tabs on all things Mary Lynn?
Pretty active on Instagram. And honestly, Facebook is really hard for me. I never got into it. So if you ever want to comment or say anything, I will respond on Instagram. I post on Facebook. I just don't go on there. So it's just my full name.
Mary Lynn Rice Cub. And did anyone in your, when you were just starting out, did anyone encourage you to try to change your last name or alter the spelling or anything like that?
I'd known that I was going to do this as a career. I would have changed it, but it's too late now.
Shut it down. Awesome. Well, so great talking to you again. And thanks for the laughs.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for doing what you do.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks. I really appreciate it. I'm a big fan, obviously. So look forward to more.
Yes. All right. I'll see you later.
Okay. Have a great one.
Bye.
Bye. Help. I need your help. That's right. I want your help asking these guests better questions. Send them in to howsuccesshappens@entrepreneur.com. And if it's not too crazy, I'll ask it. Even if it is too crazy.